morning, we're learning the Lachem Aleph. We are in the 7th chapter, and we're going to be finishing it today. This is our 6th week learning this chapter. The only reason why I know this is because, as you know, I tape all the classes. I put them up just this past week online. I completely forgot how many weeks it's been, but week number 6. We're going to be concluding this parak shortly. We did touch upon a couple of these psukim, but if we would begin with Pasuk Mem Ches, verse 48 on page 80, just to reacquaint ourselves with something which is a quite unusual detail, which not everyone's familiar with, when it came to the construction of the first temple of Shlomo. The Pasuk tells us as follows, Pasuk Mem Ches, V'yash Shlomo is kol ha-kelim asher beis Hashem. So it tells us that Shlomo made all these, the vessels that we've been discussing for the past 5 weeks prior, exactly how it was accomplished, and all the copper and all the different things, the sea of Shlomo and everything, is Mizbach HaZahav. He made a golden altar, that's HaShulchan, Asher Olav Lechem HaPanim Zahav. And he also made this Shulchan, which was placed in the Kodesh, in the Holies, in which the Lechem HaPanim, the showbreads were placed on this Shulchan, and it was made out of gold. The bread wasn't made out of gold.
No, it was the Shulchan.
Lechem HaPanim Zahav. It's like, bite your teeth into that. Stale bread, yeah. We saw it. We saw it, right? Pretty expensive. Pretty expensive. There, go ahead.
The Shulchan was on top of the Mizbeah?
No. It was the Shulchan.
No, Asher Olav Lechem HaPanim.
Which was upon.
The Mizbeach was that they made a golden Mizbeach.
Right.
And then the Shulchan.
And the Shulchan was made out of gold as well. And on the Shulchan were 12 different shelves, 6 and 6, in which the breads were placed. Now it sounds very clear that there was one. Anyone who thinks of the vessels in the Beis HaMikdash, certainly in the Mishkan, we see all the different pictures, they have one menorah, one mizbeach, one shulchan. Now it says over here, pasuk mem tes, and this is straight from the navi. So it says, v'esam menorahs chamesh miyamin v'chamesh mismol v'fnei hadvir zahav sagur. So we said it was this very fine gold, but listen how many menorahs there were. There was 10, 5, really actually 11. That's what it sounds like. Maybe 5 on the right of it. And 5 on the left of it, or maybe 5 on one side, 5 on one side. Lifnei HaDvir, which was in front of the Devir, which is the Kodesh HaKadoshim, was in the Kodesh. The Holy of Holies, as we'll see in the next parak, is what housed the Aron. The Aron isn't here yet. Next parak is going to discuss how the Aron ended up getting into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. But at least at this point, we see that Shlomo had 10 menorahs, which is pretty unbelievable. And let's just finish this pasuk. V'haperach v'haneros, as together with the flowers and the lamps, v'hamekachim zohav, as well as the tongs, which are made out of gold. And as we did also conclude last week, if you look in the words of the Radak tells us about 5 lines from the bottom, that not only when it came to the menorah was there 10, but also, Kiyasar Shulchanos Asa Shlomo. That Shlomo made 10 Shulchanos as well, which again boggles the mind. You could think for a second that he would have gone apparently against that which the Torah was. And why would he have done such a thing? So we're going to spend a few minutes discussing the significance of this. And if you look furthermore in the Radak 4 lines from the bottom, where you have the Dibur HaMarchil, the words Chamish Miyamin V'Chamish Mesmol, which is in bold, it says Perish Miyamin Menoros Moshe. So in fact, doesn't mean that there was only 10. And what does it mean, the right? The right of what? Moshe's menorah. So Moshe Rabbeinu's menorah, so in addition to that, he also had 5, and Chamish menorahs, v'chamish mesol menorahs Moshe, and 5 on the other side of Moshe. So in other words, in the Kodesh was a total of 11. And your theory is? In the light, that's what he said, right? Avol kol ha-menoros ha-yugam kein bedarom v'chein kol ha-shulchanos b'safon. One should not think that there were just menoros all over the place. But the menorahs were always on the southern side, was on the southern side of the holies of the Kodesh, and the Shulchan was always on the north. So if there was, in this case, 11, so you had 11 menorahs on the left, or on the south, and then you had 11 Shulchanos, 11 of these tables on the northern side. And as we've discussed as well, this is an interesting concept to think about when it comes to Amidah, when it comes to our prayers, is that when a person davens, we daven toward the Kodesh Kodashim, but if a person wishes to daven for Chachma, for wisdom, then you should daven a little bit toward the direction of the south, so that you're hitting where the menorah is, and the menorah represents light and Torah, so therefore that davening for Chachma, so right before, I tell my students, right before a final exam, you should kind of shift your feet a couple inches in this direction. You never know, it may help you out on some true or false question. And a person who is praying for parnasah, for a livelihood, for sustenance, they could daven a little bit closer toward the direction of the Shulchan. This is brought down in the Talmud. This is not my idea. This is brought down in Chazal.
What's the time frame here and when Moshe with Moshe? What are we talking about?
Many hundreds of years?
Yeah. I mean, like Moshe, the menorah that Moshe made is still there?
Yeah, it's about
450
years. Of course.
Yeah. I wish I had a little thing over here. I don't have that's going to be the question we're going to discuss. That's a lot of bread. So that's going to be another question. Unfortunately, I don't have that in front of me here. Anyway, but okay. So that certainly is worthwhile exploring that question. What exactly was on these shulchanot, these tables, and what exactly was going on over here? So, unfortunately, not in front of us, not in this packet. But I'd like to share with you just for a moment when it came to the shulchan, a couple of different opinions. So I'm reading from the Sefer called Otzer Meforsha. He says as follows, that Asar Shulchanos Asa Shlomo, that he made these 10 tables, V'lohoi Masadrin Ela Al Shel Moshe, that when it came to putting the actual Lechem upon him, it was only on Moshe's, because it says, V'es HaShulchan Asher Alav Lechem upon him Zahav. The Pasuk says, we just read, Shulchan singular. So it sounds like there was only one table which actually had these showbreads. But you can imagine this is a dispute. This is Gemara Menachos. Rabbi Elazar ben Shemua says that Al Kul Mahoy Masadrin, that actually he did put breads on all of them. But it says Shulchan. So he says Pamim Al Zeh or Pamim Al Zeh. So we would switch off. Exactly what the significance of that is. So it was every 11 weeks would be a different. That Shulchan would again be used. We're going to see that. I'll get to that too.
There's
symbolism and things like that.
Where does it say so many? It says the menorah is chamesh for chamesh, but where does it say about the tables?
You're right. Because the pasuk only says v'es shulchan, but if you look, okay, you're right. So let's, in that case, before I keep jumping over in the Otzer HaMidrashim, if you look in the Radak, the English is on the same too, if you look in the Radak, which is the fifth line, which I only read the words, Kisar Shulchanos Asa Shlomo, but if you read, continuing in Chronicles, Kamosha Kosa B'Dibri HaYamim, it says, five lines from the bottom in the Radak, the second very wide line in the Radak, on page 80, it says, V'yas Shulchanos Asara. V'yomer v'esa Shulchanos V'aleihem Lechem Haponim. Exactly what that means, V'aleihem, and upon them is the Lechem Haponim. Maybe is the reason why this other opinion is that each of them had Lechem Haponim. At least maybe they switched off. You see, you're right. Not in our Sefer does it mention anything about more than one Shulchan.
Where does it say it?
But in Dibur HaYomim, in Chronicles, in Sefer Dibur HaYomim, it does say, V'yas Shulchanos, recounting the construction of the first base of Mikdash and the vessels therein, it mentions Shulchanos plural, more specifically, asar. That's what it says. But you're right, that's a good point, because it does not say that here. All it does is mention the menorahs over here. Why? I don't know. Maybe it's self-understood that if there's this many menorahs and there's that many shulchanos as well, to counter. I don't know why the pasuk doesn't mention it. But let me share another thought, a third opinion. Davar acher, now we're back in the Oter Hamid Rashi. Afal bi shasa shlomo asar shulchanos, even though he made these 10 tables, olhoi masari lechem apanim tchila el al shulchan shomoshe. When he made the lechem upon him, he first only had it for the one for Moshe, to show it's special, to make it distinguished among the others. And then afterwards he did them all. So the third opinion, so the first opinion was only on Moshe, second was switched off, and the third one is it started off with Moshe, but then after, whatever, 5 minutes, whatever it was, then on there was showbreads on all the shulchanos, which... That kind of makes sense, because otherwise what's the significance of having the shulchanos with all these different shelves if it's never being used? But again, that's the three-way opinion.
And the scholars were eaten at the end of the week.
Yeah, right, by the rotating kohanim, the mishmaros.
Yeah, they kept fresh. Yeah.
That was the miracle. Yeah. Right, it was miraculous. You can imagine that a similar dispute is found when it came to the menorahs. And I'll share this with you as well. And then we'll talk about the symbolism of why there was this amount. Again, the question is, v'chi b'chol ha-menorahs ha-yimishtamshin, were all these menorahs actually kindled? El-Shonu Rabuseinu, our rabbis teach us, again, it's a Gemara in Menachos, that Eser menorahs asa Shlomo, that we know that he made 10. V'lo ha-yimadlikin el-Mishal Moshe, he only lit Moshe's, opinion number one. Guess what the next opinion is? Rabbi Lezman and Shmuel Amir Balkulim Hoy Madlikin. He lit them all. Pa'amim Bazu, Pa'amim Bazu. Sometimes this, sometimes that. And since we can imagine, the third opinion, Davracher, Afal Pisha says Shlomo Esther Menorahs. Even though he made these 10 menorahs, Lohi Madlikin Tchila El Menorah Shel Moshe. He first had Moshe's menorah lit in order to show that special and unique it came from Moshe. And then afterwards he lit all of them. So that's, again, the third opinion, exactly what happened. So in other words, you can use your imagination, and whichever way you look at it is a possibility. Now, again, just to discuss the significance of why he created these menorahs is brought down furthermore in the Otzer HaMidrash, in two little pieces, and then we're going to move forward. We'll see an important paragraph in English, and we'll see the next pasuk. Lama asa Moshe shiva neros. Now, if there was a menorah, it's not like our Chanukiah. A lot of people mistakenly call on Chanukah a menorah, but it's not really a menorah, because the menorah has 7 branches. That's only found in the Beit HaMikdash. Our Chanukiah has 8. Is it the biggest sin in the world to call your Chanukiah menorah? No, but that's why people call it a Chanukiah, to distinguish it from the menorah, which is 7 branches in the temple in the Beit HaMikdash. Okay. Is there something you want to say?
No. Yeah, is it 7 branches but only 6 lights?
7. There's 7 lights, in fact.
So this is not an exact...
Right, it's just a little design. And in fact, in Parshas, well, Baaloscha, in this week's Parsha, which we're reading about, which Baaloscha Tanero talks about the kindling of the lights, it says that one of the things was the flames, the 3 on the left, the 3 on the right, went toward the center light. So that's how it was actually designed, so that the wicks faced the center, as though to show that whether a person, you want to get a little bit, whatever, you're right. If you're on the left, then you're right. The main thing is that you're facing one another, and you're facing toward the center, as long as you're not losing sight of the center. Okay, a cute little drush. Anyway, well, it's just, so what is the significance of the 7, even though there's 1 menorah, but it's 7 branches. Why is there 7 lights? And it could be. Okay, it could be similar to that Indian. He brings down, the Otzer Midrash brings a different idea, but that makes a lot of sense. The building of the Beis HaMikdash, we're going to see, is very much connected to the creation of the world, which we'll see at the last pasuk in this parak. It's a very good point. I'll have to bring that up again. But Shlomo, Shivim Neros, Be'eser Menoros. Why did he have to have 70? Why did he have to outdo Moshe? I mean, you don't have to outdo Moshe. Moshe's the greatest. Why would you have to outdo him? 7? to 70. Why? What's the symbolism of 7 as opposed to 70? So this is what it brings down. Moshe, as we know, didn't live in Yerushalayim. He never made it to Israel. The only thing that he had was the Mishkan, the tabernacle which was in the wilderness. So the Mishkan that he made, the purpose of taking the Jews from the wilderness was to bring them ultimately to Israel. What was their obstacle to get into the land of Israel? 7 nations. Akar Shiva Umos Mlithni Israel. He had to be able to go through 7 nations to, if you will, to conquer 7 nations which comprised the Eretz Israel at the time, the land of Canaan. Avos Shlomo Hayim Moishel Al Shivim Umos. We know that Shlomo, he didn't just rule over one little land, one nation. He ruled over the entire world. He's one of the few people that are known in Chazal to have run over the Kippah, the entire world. Ahasuerosh, Xerxes was one of them also. Nebuchadnezzar, whatever. But Shlomo ruled over all 70 nations. Shnemer, Shlomo hayim Moshe b'chol hamlachos. So the symbolism of the 70 lights represents that I am in control and in power of these 70 nations. And obviously, as we're going to see in the next little piece, is that it's not through my own might, but it's the connection through Torah, connection through God, the Beis HaMikdash. That's why I have the abilities to be able to control the world, is because I know that I'm not in control. God is in control. We see this next paragraph, and then I apologize and we'll move on. He asks, again, the same question, what's the symbolism of the 70? Again, it's Keneged, Elohim Keneged Asar Dibros. He says, the 10 menorahs represent the 10 Dibros, incorrectly translated as the 10 commandments. So the 10 commandments is something in which gives us guidance, it gives us light, just like the menorah gives us guidance and light. That's what light does. V'chol menorah yesh ba sheva neros. As we said, every menorah is 7. So harishivim, that's 70. Keneged shivim umos, the 70 nations. Well, the 70 nations didn't get the Torah, but shekolzman sheneros dolkos, as long as those lights were symbolically lit, the message is that ha'umos mischamshim mitachas mnei Yisrael, that the nations will be, let me frame it as, protected underneath the wings of the Jewish people. Miyom shechar beis hamikdash. Once the beis hamikdash is destroyed, the kabo haneros, and unfortunately those candles which were lit have extinguished. Misgabrin huumos amni Israel. Now the nations have the power over the Jewish people. V'ner hu keneged haTorah shenimshul v'ner shenemer kiner mitzvah Torah or that the candle represents Torah. So therefore, as long as we adhere to the 10 commandments, which represents the menorah, which represents the light, that will become a light onto the nations of all 70 candles represent the 70 nations that we will be able to give guidance to. But as soon as we have the Beis HaMikdash destroyed, or we do not anymore observe or adhere to the Seres HaDibros, then unfortunately, the nation no longer looks at us as we're unique and special. We just become regular people. And the only thing that protects Klal Yisrael is the fact that we have the eternal Torah and our connection to God, which is eternal. And therefore, the importance of the Aseret HaDibros and the symbolism that Shlomo wanted to teach and relay the message of making sure that at all costs we have to adhere to Torah and to mitzvos for the sake of us and for the entire world. Okay. With that said, let's move on. Pasuk Nun. Vasipos vahamizmoros vahamizrakois vahkapois vahmachtois zahav sogar. So we have all these different other vessels which were made out of gold, jugs, musical instruments, bowls, spoons, pans. Vahposos ladalsos habayas apanim lukosha kadashim ladalsi habayas lahechol zahav. Also made out of gold are the hinge sockets of the doors of the inner house, as well as the Kodesh for the Kodesh HaKadoshim and the doors of the temple of the Beis HaMikdash. All of this was made out of Zahav. sparing no expense, as we said before. Okay. That we're going to see in the next pasuk. Pasuk Nunav, you may be thinking, okay, we're getting close to the end of the parak. We're not even close yet. Now, there's one other point that I really should not have forgotten to mention. Now, we did see it last week, but it is very important that no one should walk away with any potential mistake. So we can please just for a moment look on page 81 before we see the last pasuk. If you look on page 81 in English, on the right side in the middle, it says the words, although the Torah. So let's read this paragraph together. It's very important to see this. Although the Torah calls for only one table, one menorah, one laver, and he made 10 of everything, Solomon made 10 of each. To understand that such deviations in the Torah's directives for the tabernacle, it should be noted, that the instructions for Solomon's temple were transmitted to David through divine revelation and prophecy. No one should think for a moment that he just decided to make all the stuff up. It was all done through divine revelation and through prophecy. Okay?
It's almost like Aaron's sons when they decided to do on their own, they were killed.
Right. And the question, I think, which was asked is, how do we know necessarily it was divine revelation and prophecy? And the answer is, do we find that he did anything wrong? Do we find him being punished? No. On the contrary, we're going to end up seeing that things are going to go very well for him. And the Beis HaMikdash is going to be, there's going to be an inauguration, there's going to be a whole huge affair, a wonderful, wonderful gathering in the starting of the Beis HaMikdash, which leads to the obvious conclusion that he didn't just make it up. And therefore, no one should ever think that that's the case. And it's an important message because we have the Torah, which gives us specific guidelines on how to perform mitzvahs. So we can say, you know what? I think I could do the mitzvah a little bit differently and enhance it in this way. There is an element of Zekhel Ganvei, who's supposed to beautify mitzvahs. But you have to know what that means. Beautifying a mitzvah does not mean
changing
it. Changing a mitzvah means it's no longer a mitzvah. Now it's your own made-up thing. And if you think that you're enhancing the mitzvah, that's a huge mistake. We don't have the authorization, ability to do such a thing. We have to adhere to exactly what the Torah tells us to do, all the mitzvahs, and that's all there's to say.
That's the meaning of the word mitzvah.
Right.
Commandment.
Right, so you have to do exactly as I'm telling you to do, not to deviate from it. Again, you can still beautify it. I can say, could you please wash the dishes? And you could wash the dishes with just water, or you can really scrub them really, really well, nice and clean with soap until they're shining. And you could dry them also, I guess. You know, maybe. So there's more you can.
But it's still the same dishes, and it's really the same.
Right. Exactly. Right. So there's ways you can do ways to do it. There's ways to do it.
Take pride in what you enjoy.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. Exactly. Okay. Pasuk Nun Aleph. So, Pasuk Nun Aleph, which concludes our parak, tells us the following. V'tish lam kol hamalacha. All of the work has been complete. We're going to focus on those two words later. Asher asa hamel Shlomo beis Hashem. Shlomo HaMelech had finally completed this beis HaMikdash. V'yavi Shlomo es kodshei David aviv es hakesev es hazahav es hakelim. Nosan b'otzer beis Hashem. So his father David, who's his predecessor, he had all this gold, he had all this silver, he had all these things that was collected, and of course the purpose was for the building of the Beis HaMikdash. So what did Shlomo do with all these possessions? Nosan b'otzer beis Hashem. He took a nice vault, a nice safe, and he stuck all of these very valuable possessions in these storage houses. David was supposed, all that was used, David collected all this stuff for the purpose of the Beis HaMikdash. And Shlomo, his son, his beloved son, went against his own father's wishes and did not use a single thing of his father's for the building of the Beis HaMikdash. Shlomo definitely was given the ability, instruction to build it. And the question is, why didn't, so what? So use it. Use at least the raw materials. What's the problem? So we can see this in Rashi But we can also read it in the English. So let's look on page 83 in the English. And then maybe I'll read it in the Rashi to impress you with my Ivrit. Rashi, if you look on page 83 on the left side, it says like this. Also cites a Medrash. He gives two beautiful explanations as to why Shlomo did not use his father's money, his gold, his silver. What's the problem? So Rashi cites a Medrash that Shlomo decided not to use any of David's treasures for the temple. Instead, he placed them all in storehouses. The Medrash offers two reasons why Solomon avoided using the father's materials. First of all, Solomon knew through prophetic spirit that the temple would one day be destroyed. He knew that the Beis HaMikdash, unfortunately, wasn't going to last. And he did not want Israel's enemies to claim that their idols had avenged them by destroying the temple and letting them loot the treasuries David had taken from them. So they felt, if this is what Shlomo thought with such foresight, that if he built the Beis HaMikdash with his father's materials, people hated David because David was a warrior. He was a man of war. I mean, he was a tremendous man, one of the greatest people ever walked the face of this earth. But he had his share of enemies. And they would have loved to have seen the temple destroyed. And they took their worthless little stones and whatever they worshipped and wasted their time praying to. But if eventually, because of our own iniquities, the Beis HaMikdash would be destroyed, they would attribute it to their idols. And they would say it's because that David character, all those raw materials were used through him, and he was wrong. So Shlomo said that we would not want them to think it. And I think, just as a caveat, I think Shlomo would not want the Jewish people to think it. That we should not think that the reason why the temple was destroyed, it was David's fault. It was because he had enemies. They prayed for him. No, the reason is, it's me. It's our fault. The Beis HaMikdash was destroyed because of our shortcomings, not because of David's shortcomings. So therefore, Shlomo built the Beis HaMikdash specifically with raw materials that there was nothing that anyone could possibly connect back to, any hatred or anything harboring in their hearts. Therefore, when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, it was destroyed because of us. And therefore, we have to do tshuva. Second thing brought down over here, Solomon believed that his father should... This is unbelievable. This is an unbelievable thing. You could never read such a thing. You couldn't make such a thing up. But this is what's brought down in Rashi. Solomon believed that his father should have used this money for food during the three-year famine, when the poor were going hungry. Solomon felt that the money was tainted with the blood of those who perished through the famine. Now, it's true that the famine came about because of a mistake, maybe his mistake about counting the people, and why did he count the people when you're supposed to not count a Jew and limit them to a number, and he was given the option of three choices of how to get punished, and he chose famine because that's something which is directly from God, it's not in the hands of man, which is the sentence that we say again in Tachnun, V'yomer David el God, that David said to God, I am going to choose V'ad Adam Alapola. I do not want to fall by the hands of man. That's what we recite every time during Tachnun when a person puts their head on their hand. That's the sentence that we rely on God. But Shlomo said that his father should use that money to help people. You have money, you could store it away for a rainy day. Today's a rainy day. There's someone who's starving, there are people impoverished, there are people that are in need. You have to help those people. Don't hold on to your money so you can build some wonderful thing later on. What do you mean a wonderful thing? It's the Beis HaMikdash. This doesn't matter. Right, he wasn't instructed. And even if maybe this money was going to be later on designated to build the Beis HaMikdash, maybe it was a good thing to build the Beis HaMikdash with this money. But the reality is that Hashem would rather, you know what, don't build me a house. Don't build me that Beis HaMikdash. I'd rather that people should live. I don't want my children to perish. And in fact, that's one of the major messages going in the opposite direction of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. I spoke about this a couple of years ago, and Rav Soloveitchik talks about this, that the destruction of the Beis Mikdash is actually the ultimate nechama, is actually the ultimate comfort for the Jewish people. And he brings down that Hashem was angry. Hashem was angry at us.
On Tisha B'Av you talk about.
Right. Hashem was angry at us. And Hashem did not know what to do. Should I punish my people or a building? And he took all of his anger and wrath and he poured it on Eitzim and Avanim. He took it all on stones. The destruction of the Beis Mikdash, and it's interesting that the temple burning happened at the very, very end of Tisha B'Av. That's when all the laws of Tisha B'Av get more and more lenient. Right? You would think it should be more strict. The majority of the Beis Mikdash burned after Tisha B'Av on the 10th.
Until the next day.
And those that actually do have some, we have some avails, a little bit into it, but you would think that the major part of Tisha B'Av should be later. No. It's because Hashem says, you know what? The Beis Mikdash, it's beautiful. The Beis Mikdash is very, very important. But you know what? My people are much, much more important. And therefore, the ultimate comfort is when the first flame hit the Beis HaMikdash. That was the Nechama, because what Hashem was saying is, you will continue,
you.
I will not destroy you. And therefore, I believe, twisting it a little bit to what we're saying, the opposite direction, also in the building of the Beis HaMikdash is the same message. Hashem would love to have this Beis HaMikdash built, but at what cost? At the cost of human life? Never. Human life is more precious than any building, even the best.
There's no indication that David wanted that Shlomo tried to influence his father during his lifetime to help the poor or something.
I mean, we know that David has helped people in the past. David brought, you know, he had people at his house, and you know, he did things to assist people and to help them, you know. But
not David, Shlomo. I mean, like Shlomo tried to convince or influence David.
That I'm not so sure about. Let's not forget, Shlomo was a very young man when he took over the position of being the king. So he really didn't have much to do, and the last years of David's reign were him being sick.
So when was the famine? The famine was when Shlomo was very young, probably.
For sure. If he was alive at the time, which I believe he was, but yeah, it was. Absolutely. Let's just look also, if we may, in this English, where it says the Abarbanel suggests a different reason. The Abarbanel suggests a different reason. Solomon understood that the prophetic message of Nathan the prophet, which is at the end of middle of Shmuel Beis, that it was God's will that not only should David not be the builder of the temple, but that he should have no involvement whatsoever in the construction. Thus, the temple should be built exclusively by Solomon. Interesting. Now, therefore, that's the reason why he chose not to use any of his father's raw materials.
Exactly.
He collected it from different people, taxes and things like that.
So much.
Yeah.
So much. After so many wars, and he's not fighting.
He was a lover, not a fighter.
He married into money.
What? He what?
He married into money.
He married into money, but he didn't. All that money was tainted.
All the kings and the queens and the princesses.
But he didn't want anything.
Talk about where he accumulated.
Talks a little bit about it, not in this parak, but a few parakim before, about all the different taxes and that he laid, all these different tariffs and things that he placed upon him. But it did mention, this is way back, I won't be able to find it right away, that it was a time of affluence, so that people didn't mind so much. That's kind of what it's brought down.
It says in the explanation that he thought that the other nations would think that it was destroyed because of the idols destroyed.
Right, right.
But you don't know where he took the money from other nations to build the idols.
Right. No, you're right. It's a good point. So, to conclude this chapter, we have to focus on what Linda mentioned before, which we'll have to tell her that she came up with a very nice thought. It said in Pasuk Nun Aleph, the Tishlam Kol HaMalacha, all of the work. Wait a minute. Finish the work, Kol HaMalacha. What is that coming to teach me? What's that adding? So it says like this. It's actually a few different pieces over here. It tells us, and we're going to see, that when did he actually finish the malacha? He finished building the Beis HaMikdash in Mar Cheshvan, in the month of Cheshvan. Now, you'll see, it's still actually on our page, in Perches, that when it came to the actual inauguration, when the Aram came about and the celebration, you can see the very, very last line, which is in Pasuk Beis, in 8th Perek, it says, was Beyerech Ha'esani, B'chag, during the holiday of Sukkot, which is the month of Tishrei. It's interesting. The Beis HaMikdash was built, completed, in the month of Cheshvan, which let's translate that as what, October? Okay? And the actual time in which the inauguration, the people came and started bringing the sacrifice and everything, was not until Tishrei, which we can call September. It could be almost 11 months, almost a year, right?
The Chanukah Sabayis was Chanukah, wasn't it?
The, not for the Beis HaMikdash, the Mishkan.
That was for Mishkan?
No, for the second Beis HaMikdash. The second Beis HaMikdash.
This is the first, wasn't
it? Yeah, for the first Beis HaMikdash, we see explicitly, you will see that it was constructed in Mar Cheshvan, and they actually started coming in Sukkot, in the month of Tishrei, which is like a 20-minute discussion. Why is Tishrei called Yerech Ha'esanayim, which is really the time of gathering, which is the Chag
Ha'aser. Why did they come in Tishrei? If it was finished already in...
That's the question. What took them so...
Pesach.
Right, they should have... Right, at least maybe if they want to wait till one of the Shel Shergalim, one the pilgrimage festivals, that would have been a better one. So... So, go ahead.
So the Stav says, Chodesh Tishrei Nikra Yerech Eisen, Lesha Eitan Vachozeh.
Right, it was a time, that's a...
Chodesh Tishrei Heim Heim Ha'adim Ha'yoter Chazakim Ha'mesherim Es Ha'adam El Hashlemus.
Right, so that... Go ahead, what do you mean?
It's a strong, it's strong.
That's why it's called the month of Tishrei. It's a time when a person is strong, a person is strong with food, with mitzvos. Right. So maybe on some level, maybe the idea of that the best time to start the Beis HaMikdash is a time when people have that spiritual strength so then they can begin going to the Beis HaMikdash at that time. But you can imagine that there was a lot of controversy in this whole thing. 11 months, no building of the Beis, nothing happened. Imagine you build a building, spend so much time, and all of a sudden, it's like, it's empty. What's going on over here? You don't build a building and then just, it's unoccupied for 11 months. So this is a major issue that's brought down in the psikta that people asked. And when people start wondering, unfortunately, not just in this day and age, people sometimes think the worst. And what people thought was, you know what? Maybe Shlomo's not the one who was supposed to build the Beis HaMikdash. Maybe he shouldn't have built this thing. This is what it says. It says it was not inaugurated until the month of Tishrei, 11 months later. By a kol mimamalin al Shlomo woman, they were saying v'chilu bana shel bas sheva who shulhaisa royal malchus. This guy shouldn't have been the king. He's a product of a tainted relationship of bat sheva, right? And what right did his father David have to take bat sheva, right? And of course David. We spoke about over Shavuos. Also, people said that a tainted relationship. By how do you have a right to take Ruth? Hech, v'lachin, ain't a kodesh baruch mishar shechinaso v'toch maase adav. God's not coming down to this place. God's divine presence is not coming down. That's what they're saying. So new taka. What's the reason? Why not? So Tova gave one explanation. The Psikta says something a little bit different. It says. Elohim chashav l'orav simchas beis hamikdash v'chodesh shenoed bo Avraham v'ubiyerech chodesh Tishrei. That in the month of Tishrei, something else very important happened. Avraham, our forefather, was born. And therefore, to connect, to go full circle, the beis hamikdash to our avos, therefore Hashem said, you know what, I'd rather wait until that month, that most auspicious time in which our avos were born, in order to be able to show that there's a connection between our avos and the Beis HaMikdash. And therefore, that's the reason why I waited. One other last thought, and this is what Linda mentioned, then we'll have to stop finishing at least the parak, all three psukim. I don't even want to show you the next parak, about 70 psukim. It says like this, HaMelacha, it says all the Melacha was finished. What do you mean all the Melacha? So it says, B'melechas sheshes yimei breishis. It's not just referring to the temple. It's referring to the creation of the world. The world has now finally been complete. And if you look, as we say in our Kiddush, as we say in the beginning of the book of Genesis, it says, Mikol melachto asher bara Elokim la'asos. Interesting. Asa in ksiv. It doesn't say that all the work which God asa has done in the past. Ela la'asos. Let me read the sentence, because we hear it all the time, but we don't always think about what that sentence means. But it's profound. We remember the Shabbos, Mikol melachto, from all the work, asher bara Elokim, that Hashem created, la'asos, to be done. Which means that it's not only talking about the malacha that was completed, but it's talking about lasos, that there's something that's still lacking. There's something still missing in this world. What is that that is missing? Ve'ezu, kivan shebana shlomo bana beis hamikdash. Once the beis hamikdash was built, Hashem said, Achshav shlomo melecha shemayim ba'aretz. Now, shlomo, you have completed the world in its entirety. V'zehu, and this is what it means when we read V'tishlam, that it's complete, shalem, it's a whole, kol ha-malacha, everything. And therefore he also says, that's the name of this man who built the Beit HaMikdash. The man who built the Beit HaMikdash, his name is Shlomo. Shehishlim HaKadosh Baruch Hu-malachas, sheshes mebreshes otof masi adav. That he was a man that made not just shalom, peace, but shalem, he completed that which God had started. And that, of course, is our goal in this world, as we've discussed it many times. That Hashem gives us the raw materials, and it's our job to perfect the world. And that's what Shlomo did, and Amir Hashem, that's what we should always do throughout our lives.